This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
And welcome to Eco Radio KC. My name is Mike Murphy. I'm filling in for Natural E tonight, who's off trick-or-treating. And so the MidwestEnergyNews.com reports that efforts to expand the electric vehicle infrastructure in the Kansas City area are hitting a roadblock amid pushback from state regulators. Early in 2015, Kansas City Power and Light announced it would install about 1,100 electric vehicle charging stations in the greater Kansas City area. At the time, it apparently was the largest such undertaking in the country. The utility indicated that it wanted to give a nudge to the electrification of vehicles, a potential boon for KCP&L and electric utilities in general. But KCP&L is backing away. Following installation of about 230 of 315 charging stations that it planned for the Kansas side of the Kansas City metropolitan area, the project is also underway in Missouri, the utility put the other 85 on hold after the Kansas Corporation Commission last month denied the company's request to charge ratepayers for the $5.6 million initiative. A KCP&L spokeswoman wrote in an email that, as a result of the KCC ruling, we are putting a hold on the installation of new charging stations in Kansas and plan to revisit electric vehicle charging infrastructure with the KCC at a later date. In our Missouri territory, we are still on track to continue our discussions with the Missouri Public Service Commission. And Ricochet Media reports members of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues arrived at Standing Rock late Sunday afternoon in North Dakota to hear complaints of human rights violations for some of the 141 people swept up in the mass arrests on October 27th. This is very important for us to be here to document their perspectives on what's happening and to really see for ourselves these violations firsthand, explained Roberto Borrero, member of the Taino community and a UN programs consultant, in an interview with Ricochet on Sunday at the camp. Members of Standing Rock Sioux and their supporters, including elders and youth, were rounded up with the use of tear gas and rubber bullets by police officers and riot gear after a standoff on Thursday escalated. The heavily militarized police operation involved more than 200 officers. Most protesters were charged with trespassing, arson, conspiracy to endanger by fire, rioting, and assaulting officers. Borrero is not the only outsider observers who have made their way to Standing Rocks in recent days. On Saturday, representatives from Amnesty International arrived, joining various marches and prayers on the front line in order to observe the behavior of police and the National Guard. And EcoWatch reports that in the last 3 years, farmers in parts of California's Central Valley irrigated nearly 100,000 acres of food crops with billions of gallons of oil field wastewater possibly tainted with toxic chemicals, including chemicals that can cause cancer and reproductive harm, according to an environmental working group analysis of state data. Since 2014, oil companies reported that they use more than 20 million pounds and 2 million gallons of chemicals in their operations, including at least 16 chemicals the state of California classes as carcinogens or reproductive toxicants under the state's Proposition 65 law. That recycled wastewater was sold then to irrigation districts in Kern County. The Central Valley Regional Water Quality Control Board has allowed the practice for at least four decades and only recently required the oil companies and water districts to disclose the details. Environmental Working Group detailed its findings in a report released Wednesday, 2 days before a public meeting of an expert panel convened to study the practice's safety. Although scientists don't know whether using oil field wastewater to grow crops poses a health risk to people who eat the food, the Water Board has refused to halt the practice until the expert panel releases its findings. Lightly treated wastewater is blended with fresh water and applied to almonds, pistachios, citrus trees, along with grapes, carrots, beans, tomatoes, and potatoes grown throughout Kern and Tulare counties. To date, only three limited studies have been conducted, all by consultants paid by the oil companies or the irrigation districts that buy the wastewater, including one that draws conclusions based on only five water samples collected on a single day. And so that's all the news we're going to have time for today, because we do have a very busy show. We're going to find out all about permaculture in Palestine in just a few minutes. Before we get to that, we have Angela Cooper on the phone. Are you there, Angela?
I am.
All right. So we just read one of the headlines about Standing Rock, and you've got some kind of support planned for them. What can you tell us about that?
We do. We have an event plan, and there's an event on Facebook as well. It's Kansas City Stands with Standing Rock. It's Thursday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. to Sunday, November 6th at 7 a.m. And we're going to meet at the Target Kansas City North parking lot, and that's at 9040 North Skyview Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. And we are taking a trip from Kansas City, Missouri to stand in solidarity with Standing Rock in Cannonball, North Dakota. If you're not in this area, that's okay. You can make your own group and go with that group. It's all the support that can possibly go up there is needed at this time. We will meet at the Target on Skyview, and we will be leaving no later than 8 p.m. to go there so we could be there at sunrise and start there our days. Things that we need to bring. It's super cold there. We need warm outdoor camping gear, such as sleeping gear of any kind. They're also in need of supplies, lots of supplies. Thermal blankets are a huge supply problem there. They really are wanting to stay warm. So we have set up something where we can go ahead and I can take donations through the Facebook page, the events page, Kansas City Stands with Sandy Rock, or it could also go to Have a Nice Day on 39th and Broadway if you'd like to drop it off there.
It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
It's a beautiful day. I'm so sorry. It's a beautiful day. I really apologize. The things that need to be donated are toiletries, deodorants, female products, socks, boots, scarves, hats, mittens, gloves, shampoos, body wash, toothpaste, brushes, kids' toothpaste, children's socks and children's gloves, anything that would be non-perishable food items, or bottled water for sure. Water is life. We need warm clothing. Any size clothing is very appreciated. And the blankets. The blankets are the most important part. We also need solar tents and things like that, or hypothermal tents, if those things could be provided. That would be fantastic.
All right, and that's great. And so, and I saw on Facebook and shared this with you earlier that It's a Beautiful Day was, and B.J. MacArthur, who's with the band Two-Headed Cow, they were already doing a pretty targeted collection. They're looking for just like, you know, zero-degree weather sleeping bags. That's pretty much all they're looking to collect, I think. And you're going to be working with them as well, and so that they're going to be, people can drop stuff off there. Is that right?
And or they can get a hold of me off of the Facebook page, the Kansas City Stands with Standing Rock events page.
All right.
And either one would be fine. But the thermal heating stuff is so very important at this point, and they really need it. They also need water. I mean, water is a huge factor. So
yeah,
I would really appreciate any donations, but the more people that can come and stand with them, the more it just speaks volumes to our government, and maybe they'll come. And the more people that are there will bring more media. And the more media attention this gets, the more people will realize how awful it is.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So once again, give that Facebook page again.
The Facebook page is Kansas City Stands with Standing Rock. It's the event page.
All right. And you'll report back to us when you get back. Is that right?
Absolutely, I will, and I will take as many pictures as possible and live feed on Facebook as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that. I'm going to turn the ball over to Richard Mabian and his guest, but Craig, maybe you could play that, is it Climate Connections or Current Cast?
I'm Dr. Anthony Lazowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Leadership, integrity, courage. They're the attributes of a good soldier, and qualities that can be put to use as part of the clean energy revolution. Just ask Lieutenant Colonel Frederick Barber. After more than 20 years of service, he's retiring from the Army and transitioning to civilian life. But he plans to continue serving his country by joining the solar energy workforce. Barber got excited about renewable energy after watching the film An Inconvenient Truth, but he didn't know how to break into the industry. Then, in a twist of fate, just as he was sharing his interest with his career transition counselor, she received a phone call about the Solar Ready Vets program.
I can just remember thinking to myself, okay, this is God telling me, this is your place, this is what you need to be doing, because you have a passion for it.
The Solar Ready Vets program is a collaboration between the Department of Energy and Department of Defense. The six-week program prepares veterans to join the solar industry as installation technicians, system inspectors, or sales representatives. Now Barbara's eager to help spread the use of solar energy.
That's what it's about, leaving the world a little bit better for the people that come behind us.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
College teachers are organizing unions in St. Louis. In an age where over half of college teachers are part-timers, they're organizing and winning representation elections. They've won recognition with the SEIU at four St. Louis area colleges and universities, and now all faculty at UMSL, the University of Missouri St. Louis, are organizing. This week on the Heartland Labor Forum, we'll find out why and how administrators are responding. Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Okay, this is Richard Mabian hosting the show tonight about this permaculture group or event that we're about to have here in the Kansas City metropolitan area. I have as my guest, Jeremy, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Jeremy Roth Cushell. I'm a documentarian from Lawrence, Kansas.
Lawrence, Kansas. Yeah. Okay. This is kind of an unusual evening for us, okay? We have a couple that live in Palestine who will be here in the Kansas City metropolitan area in the next couple of weeks. And we were contacted by a young lady from New Mexico who works with this group. This couple have a permaculture farm in Palestine, and they're going to be here in the United States putting on a going to schools. They got scholarships to a couple of schools over in Maryville studying some permaculture type processes, and I think one of the schools is on something about seeds and the other school is on something about aquaponics. So they're coming over to spend 3-4 days in those different schools, and then they'll be heading back to Palestine. Well, while they're here, They wanted to be able to have some type of session where they could speak here in the Kansas City metropolitan area to tell their story. And so that's when I was contacted by this young lady out of New Mexico named Tammy Brunk. And she was calling. She had found me on the internet, you know, from my different businesses and stuff. And contacted me to see if I would help her figure out a way that she could set something up while this couple was here in our area. So I immediately got in touch with Steve Mann, who is my permaculture guru, and he, being busy as he is, knew he wouldn't be able to do it, but he has a group that he's working with, and that's where Jeremy comes in. First of all, tell us about the group that you're working with.
There's a couple groups that are involved with helping organize this this event coming up next week on Monday. One of them is the Sustainability Action Network of Lawrence, Kansas, who is very involved in working to help make Lawrence as a city more sustainable, more ecologically just for everybody. The other group that's co-sponsoring this event and helping to put it together is the Kansas Permaculture Institute, which helps sponsor a lot of the permaculture design courses in the area. And together, both of these groups are some of the leading groups in Kansas in terms of putting on permaculture events and showcasing a lot of the permacultural projects in the area. And then we were asked by Tammy, too, to see if there would be someone like a group that wanted to sponsor the event in terms of food to give it a little Middle Eastern flair. And so we have the Aladdin Cafe in downtown Lawrence who's sponsoring that. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I hope y'all, I introduce myself. I told you, it's kind of helter-skelter here today, the way we're putting this together. But, you know, if you've been around me, you know that happens from time to time. I am Richard Mabian, and I am one of the hosts of Eco Radio Show for you folks out there who haven't met me or did not know that. Okay, so we make contact with each other, and we talk about putting this this event together. And so what is it now that actually, first of all, before we go any further, give me a elevator definition of permaculture for folks out there who don't know. What is that about?
Permaculture is a design philosophy and practice that, if in a short way of describing it, is the combination of ancient indigenous knowledge of people who have lived on land for thousands of years, combined with some the biological sciences of the late 20th and early 21st century. And so what it really is about is an integrated system of living for human beings that includes all of the facets of what we would need to have a sustainable, surviving, and thriving life. And that it would include all aspects of physical survival, such as energy, water, food, shelter, but also things that are key to being a human, which includes things that are called the invisible sector in permaculture, things such as healthcare, spiritual practices, democracy, interpersonal dynamics, law, these types of things.
Okay. So for those of us who are familiar with this environmental world that we're living in, if we could spend our time less trying to convince folks that we got a problem and spend our time more in defining what we could do about it, this permaculture idea would probably be our front burner issues. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we got one more tie-in of how Jeremy here got in and was motivated to want to get involved. Let's talk a little politics with me here. Tell us your reason for being adamant about what's happening with Palestine.
Well, I was raised as a Jewish Mexican American man in Southern California, Los Angeles, and always was taught a political awareness, but a deep politics, not necessarily partisan politics, but politics in terms of the commitment to public life. So I was a peace activist for a while, found my way into justice and truth activism. And being Jewish, there are two governments in the world that operate in my name. One is, you know, my home country, the United States of America, and then the other is Israel, which is the Jewish state. And, you know, over time, I've learned a lot about what's going on in Palestine, and the folks who are coming into the country to do this presentation, they actually have a permaculture farm on the very edge of the West Bank of Palestine that butts right up against what are essentially is an illegal settlement in Israel. And, you know, so there's this, a lot of people are familiar with some of the injustices that Palestinian people have to live with every single day. But this is a very interesting solution to all of this. Permaculture, like you said, if we were going to focus not so much on problems but solutions, permaculture would be the edge. And one thing in permaculture, there's a shorthand that says the problem is the solution. It means that if we change our mind about how we might look at a problem, we'll actually see an grappled with solution. So, for example, this MARTA permaculture farm here on the West Bank, they're purposefully and maybe unpurposefully, sewage has been released down the hill from these settlements that then run into these farmlands. So in permaculture, you would say, okay, yes, we want to stop the sewage. But at the same time, sewage is really nutrients that haven't been utilized. realized yet. And so this is what some of what they're doing, turning things that are a downside, that are oppression, into nutrients for the people to eat, so to create mineralized food.
So now you get a little background on Jeremy's reason for wanting to participate in this event. Mine was behind the term empowerment. When I was reading the information about them and what they have accomplished and what they have done, they have taken, it's one of those deals where you're making something out of nothing. And they did it in such a way to empower people. Now, you have politics, like you said, that exists in everybody's life and in everybody's world. But when you care about people, and as all you know, that's what I do. I care about people. I care about what's happening in our inner cities, not just from a black perspective, but from a multicultural perspective of how and what we can do to try to empower people to become self-sufficient and to be able to manage them and their children and their well-being. Well, that is what captivated my attention to want to be able to hear from this group. So here's what we've done. We got the group coming. They'll be here something like November the
7th. A week from tonight,
they'll be up in Lawrence, and we'll give you all that information. Because what we did, along, I had the young lady from New Mexico, and the two people who are going to be here, we did a Skype. We did a Skype here at the station last Friday with the help of my main guy. Mike was out of town, so we got the help of Jeff Hunfield, came in and helped us on the board. And what we did is made a recording. Now, this is, don't expect this to be one you'll hear on CNN, because I was the host of the recording, so you know about how that went. So we're going to stop now and let you listen to these two actual people, and Tammy and myself, talking about themselves, Palestine, what they're doing, and them coming here. This is our way of giving you a little taste of what's going to be in store for you. So without any further delay.
Hey, this is Richard Mabian, and I'm getting ready to have an interview with a group of people who, by luck, by chance, or however we want to put it, found me, actually, and got in touch with me, a young lady named Tammy. And wanted to know about the possibility of having this couple that's going to be here in our area speaking in Maryville, Missouri, and wanted to know, was there anything we could do to have them come to Kansas City? So I got busy on my end, and we got in touch with a group of folks that's with the permaculture group, because the folks are from Palestine. And they have a Palestine, they have a permaculture business or lifestyle that they have created there. And they want to come here and have a session and tell us about it. So what this interview today is about is kind of a primo, getting ready for people to know what's going to be going on here. And it looks like it's supposed to be happening November the 9th. We may have some confusion with that, but we'll work that out as we go. So I'm going to start off by introducing you to Tammy. Tammy, you want to introduce yourself and tell people where you are and a tidbit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Tammy Brunk, and I live in New Mexico, but I have known Murad Al-Kufash, who is the founder of the farm now, for the last, oh gosh, Murad, it's like 9 years, and have been involved with the project from the beginning, mostly at a distance. And so for the first time in 10 years, Murad, again, the founder of the Marta Permaculture Farm in Palestine, he and Iba, who is really the partner in this work at the farm, the managing director, they will both be traveling to the U.S. for the first time since the farm was created in 2006. So knowing this, I was so excited. I get to see Murad for the first time in 10 years. I get to meet Iba. We've been in touch, you know, by Skype very regularly over the years. And really we were really wanting, since Iba and Murad are going to be in town on a scholarship to take these really incredible workshops on building your own home, sustainable home in 5 days, building a seed home, and then another workshop on an aquaponics system. That's why they're in Kansas City. And so I wanted to be able to really have them come speak here in the community about what's going on in Palestine and with their project, because it's such a rare opportunity to have them come and speak to people here in Kansas City. So I reached out to Richard because I'd seen, Richard, that the projects you're involved in really spoke to me. I found you online, I called you, and then the rest is history.
The rest is history. Thank you. It makes me feel like I'm somebody when you say stuff like that. Murad, I'm going to start with you, not because you're a male, just because I can say your name. It's on the first on my list. I want you to introduce yourself. I just want you to introduce yourself first, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to have you tell me about your permaculture farm. So first of all, just introduce yourself and say hello to the folks over here in the United States.
My name is Murad, and I'm from Palestine. I born and I grew up in Palestine, in my old town called Merda. It's south of Nablus. That's the biggest city in West Bank, Palestine. And being in America for 5 years, between 2001 until 2006, where I learned more and I get more involved in permaculture in Tennessee at the place called The Farm. That's where I learned more about permaculture, and I did some work in Chicago where I make money. I earn money to go back to my homeland. And that's what I did in 2006. I back to establish my own project that I have as a dream since 1993. I had that dream to have my own project as a permaculture project to teach people about permaculture.
Now, our other guest is Eba. And you notice I'm not pronouncing y'all's last name, so you have to say it because I'm not even going to try. But Eva, how do you do? Introduce yourself and kind of tell us how you got involved in this too.
Okay, thanks, Richard. My name is Eva Farah. I'm from Jerusalem, from Palestine. I studied genetics and public health, and my PhD was a bit about environment. In 2011, I participated in the permaculture design course when I met Murad and his project and his lovely dream. So since that time, 5 years back, or maybe now 6 years back, I'm involved in permaculture and environment. And now currently, since a year, more than a year, I'm fully involved in permaculture and working together with Murad to do some permaculture outreach education to other cities and other villages to work on sustainability in Palestine, which is much needed. So I'm really excited to do more permaculture stuff in my country because it's really important. And I'm really excited to do this Eco House workshop because I think it will be a changing point in our work and for others who can really do that, which we can really teach these this during the workshop. So back to you.
Very good. You did good. I enjoyed that.
Thanks.
You speak English real well, too. I had no problem at all.
Yes.
Okay, now, here's what we're going to do. Well, now, we're going to two separate parts. First part's going to be explaining how you were able to create your permaculture farm and the steps that you've gone through, and just kind of introduce us to that, because I don't want you to tell everybody everything, because we'll tell them why after we talk about your permaculture experience. I do want you to understand my background involves permaculture, and we'll talk about that when we go to the second phase. But the thing that attracted my attention about you all the most was how it was done as an empowerment experience. So as you're telling us about your form, make sure you enlighten us about how it was able to empower people.
The farm, as I said, it started in 2006, but I'm involved in permaculture since 1993. So this farm is as a administration site where I teach and I run permaculture techniques. Like to show people, and like when I say people, I mean my people or students, internationals or locally, or anybody interested to learn about permaculture or to learn how to live with nature, between the plants, trees, animals, how to grow your own food, how to harvest, how to eat this healthy food. So we try step by step to establish this this farm, small farm, and to build all these techniques from gardening, trees, vertical growing, water harvesting, raised beds, composting, chickens, all these techniques. We try to have them in one space. And in the last like view or the last level, when you close the gate of that farm, you will have everything you need from that place. You don't need anything from outside. Anything as a family or as a house needed is going to be there.
Okay.
So that's what I do since like almost 10 years now. We run courses. Yeah, we run courses like permaculture design course.
Right.
Or introduction in permaculture for 2 weeks. We do it once a year now. We attract students from Palestine or internationally. And we focus mostly on Palestinian people because we need more people from Palestine to get involved and learn more about permaculture, because we have to copy many projects, not just in Marda, in everywhere in West Bank. And I think this way is some way of resistance, especially incubation, because we live in under incubation and everything is controlled by the incubation. So we try to resist just by having our own food or to grow our own food.
Okay. I'm going to go to Eva now. Eva, and like I said, without going into too much detail, because when y'all here, I want you to have something for people to come out to hear about. So here you go. You know, you got the permaculture garden farm going. And I noticed that he said that he's really striving to get more Palestinians to learn what it is you're doing, because it's a source of creating food for eating. I noticed that. So is that basically what you see happening there? How are the Palestinians reacting to what you all are doing?
Yeah. Okay, let me tell you, when we started the permaculture design courses, most participants and students were internationals. And now, if you look at the last two PDCs, almost all of the students are Palestinians, because now in Palestine, you know, awareness about permaculture and sustainability is much more. And a lot of Palestinian students really want to do that and really want to, you know, be part of that network, so that when it grows, it really reaches all regions, not only Marda, not only that farm, which is one of, you know, very, very few in Palestine. What I also look forward to, and what I'm really doing now in the farm, is reaching more women. Not only men, because men work as farmers and they do that for as a job and for income.
Right.
But if you focus on women and women who are at home, food at the gardens, then I think the impact would be much, much, much better, because it affects the whole family, the children, the neighbors, everybody. So. Yeah, I think in Palestine it's getting to the right way, but it's still in the very first steps. I hope it moves forward much faster.
Okay. Well, now I want to, for people who just may be tuning in and wondering, what the heck's going on? Who are these people? I'm going to reintroduce all of ourselves. I am Richard Mabian, and I'm one of the hosts here for an Eco Radio show. And I have a Tammy Burks on the phone.
Brunks.
Thank you. Tammy Brunks, and she's the one that contacted me about these two people who we're sitting here interviewing, who are going to be in the Kansas City area, and we're trying to use this as a way to entice you to want to come out and hear them speak. And we'll go. That's going to be our next part we're going to go to. So I have a Murad on the phone and a Ebo on the phone, and those two people are in Palestine. And basically they have a permaculture farm, And what they have just been doing, if you just tuned in, was to tell us about the business that they've created in Palestine. And the one thing that I'm really hearing out of you two is that this permaculture form and business that you all are operating is really more about causing people, Palestinian folks, to be able to care for themselves more than it is, because you just made the separation between it being a farm where they're making money. This is like to be able to feed your family, right? Is that mm-hmm. kind of what you're focused in on, is the farm is being dealt right. So that it gives people a sense of independence where they're not having to be right. depend on something that they can't get from others, they can get it themselves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it okay for me to add something
there? Oh, yeah, jump in here.
Just because people in the U.S. may not realize that for a Palestinian, and I know when I visited there even years ago, and it's worse now, that it is the cost of food, and if you were to try to get organic produce and food, food is extremely expensive. It's a very high percentage of what people spend, those who actually have jobs, and I don't know what the percentage is now in that area, but it's a big deal to be able to grow your own food financially.
Now we're going to part two. When Tammy contacted me, she wanted to see if we could figure out a way we could schedule some kind of session here in the Kansas City metropolitan area that would allow them a chance to come out and have a say so. Tell us so we can meet them in purpose, to let the person have them tell us about what's going on at this permaculture farm that they have in Palestine, and also have a chance to meet us and talk to us. I mean, and there's going to be donations at this thing, but I can't mention prices on the air, so I'm not going to go there. I'm just telling you donations are being requested, but that's fine. So when she contacted me, I got in touch with Steve Mann. Many of you here in town know who Steve Mann is. He's my permaculture person, and he works with a permaculture group that's up in Lawrence and in the rest of around in the metropolitan area. And they met on it, and they decided they would do what they could to try to make this happen. And that's when Tammy started working with a young man by the name of Jeremy Cushell. Tammy, you want to kind of speak to that, and then we'll come back to the group, because they know very little about that part of it. So do you want to talk about that?
Jeremy is, and then also Steve Mooring, and those individuals are also working with the Kansas Permaculture Institute and the Sustainability Action Network. And so they've also been supporting and bringing this together. And so, and that is by really helping to support us getting a venue, which will be at the Campus Ecumenical Ministries in Lawrence, Kansas.
There you go.
That's where the presentation will be. And so it's really backed up by these folks, and also by Aladdin's Cafe in Lawrence. They're going to be donating some appetizers for us as well. So
that is so cool. So when you made that call to just out of a clear blue sky, we were able to pull this together, and it's actually going to happen now. I hear, Murad, that you're having some visa problems, and so there may be a difficulty in you getting here, but that's still... But you're still coming.
Yes.
We're still talking about it.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yes, you got to get that worked out.
Today I went to the Chilean embassy in Ramallah.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm applying for passports for my kids from Chile.
Uh-huh.
Because I have, like, my father born in Chile. So I have a Chilean passport. So the information I had that I can't go to America, like, and I can't get the visa at the airport. But today they told me no, because my passport is not the electronic passport, because the one I have is issued 6 months before the new passport, and I need to apply for visa.
Okay.
And today is Friday. Yeah. So now it's really risky for me. I don't know what will happen. We will try to call the embassy, the American embassy, on Friday, on Monday, and to see if they can help or they can make something, I don't know, for my visa, because it's only 3 days I have.
Right.
So I don't know what will happen.
But, well, but, or, Well, that's real. We
I
want.
Cannot come. I don't know.
Yeah, but I wanted that to be said because we want this interview to be real, and we want people here to know even still. And everybody's understandable now why there's always going to be some more difficulty in getting things done than it's been in the past. But we will have this, and if and when we know when we have the official everything we need to know, we'll make sure that we add that to our broadcast, and add that to our promos that we'll be making here on this end. But I'm just going to say that we're looking forward to you all being here. Tammy, you have been really super in working with us to make this happen. I want the people up there in Lawrence, Jeremy and Steve and the two Steves and the other folks up there who are working with us to pull this off to know how much we here at KKFI really appreciate them stepping up to the plate to be the hosts and making this happen. And I think we'll all look forward to meeting each other when we set the date to do it. So I'm going to bring this to an end of us talking. I think we've been able to tell people what we're doing. I think we'll make sure that we'll continue to make some promotional ads here on the radio to keep informing folks that you're going to be here in town. But the main thing is I wanted them to hear your voices. I wanted them to hear you talking from Palestine to let them know that we're getting ready to give them a treat here in Kansas City. So thanks a lot for calling us, and thanks a lot for having this interview with me, and I'll get back to all of you. So I'll let you all say so long in your own words, and then we'll check up out of here, okay?
Okay, thanks, Richard. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, say your name when you see it.
Thanks.
Thank you, Murad. I look forward to meeting you, too.
Say it again?
I look forward to meeting you, too.
You're welcome, bro. You're welcome, brother.
Yes, sir. You are my brother. That's right.
Okay.
Tammy?
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much, Richard.
Yes. Thank you all, and we'll see you when you get here. God bless you all.
Yeah,
take care.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Yes.
And meet you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir.
Another cleanup for Mother Nature on this current cast. Microbeads are tiny bits of plastic most often made of polyethylene. Found in face scrubs and toothpastes, they wash down the drain, slipping through filters into waterways, where they're eaten by birds and marine life. Now, a nationwide ban is phasing them out. But what about the trillions already in our water? Sherry Mason of SUNY Fredonia does not think a large-scale cleanup is possible. She says in time, the tiny beads will settle in the sediment at the bottom and be buried.
Ultimately, the reality is that we have to change our habits to reduce the sources of these things.
That means avoiding products with microbeads until the ban goes into effect in 2018. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
KKFI would like to take time out of our busy schedule to thank Jana and Pete Lindy, the wonderful people of Meshuga Bagels at 1208 West 39th Street in Kansas City, Missouri. Thank you, Meshuga, for keeping our volunteers fed and happy during our 2016 Fall Pledge Drive.
Citizens Climate Lobby is a national nonprofit organization whose purpose is to create the political will for climate solutions. CCL is sponsoring a regional conference with a talk on November 11 at 7 p.m. at the Village Presbyterian Church in Prairie Village. On November 12 to 13, a workshop will be held in the Simpson House at All Souls Unitarian Church. For details, visit the Citizens Climate Lobby website. This message is a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Alrighty, I told you they may not put my interviews on CNN, but boy, we had a good time, and it was a tremendous experience for me. That's a first for me, and a good experience for me. Jeremy, what'd you think?
I thought it was beautiful.
Did you?
From Kansas City to Palestine, right back to Kansas
right
City.
Back to it. All right, gang, so what we're going to do right now, we're going to talk about, first of all, we still got that visa problem. In fact, to make sure that this event is a go, Tammy, if you all get a chance to meet her, she's a fantastic person. She does a heck of a job, and she's a miracle worker. She's making these things happen. And for some reason, she's walking with angels because she reaches out and grabs the right people to pull the punches that need to be pulled. But from what we got right now, I'm going to let Jeremy tell you where we are, first of all, with where the plans are right now for doing this.
Okay. So another thing has been learned since your interview is that Murad, in attempting to go to the consulate in Tel Aviv, was told that he is on a blacklist by the Israeli government. They won't tell him why. It could be for his activism in Palestine. It could be for his communications with the world. But it's made it impossible for him to make it to the event that we had scheduled, which was going to be a week from Wednesday. But Iba Farah is going to step up and do and make sure that people hear this very important message from the West Bank of Palestine for inspiration and, like you've pointed out, empowerment. So we are going to continue with the same venue and the same time, but next Monday, November 7th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Ecumenical Campus Ministries, the ECM, on the edge of the KU campus in Lawrence, Kansas, 1204 Oread Avenue in Lawrence, Kansas. Iba Farah is going to present on the title of Self-Empowerment Through Permaculture in Palestine's West Bank. The event is going to be co-sponsored by Sustainability Action Network, the Kansas Permaculture Institute, and a food sponsor of the Aladdin Cafe. So please come out next Monday, November 7th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. At the Ecumenical Campus Ministries at 1204 Oread Avenue, Lawrence, Kansas.
I meant to throw out the phone number when we came back in. We got a few minutes here, not a lot, but if anybody out there had a call, we got like about 3-4 minutes we're dealing with, but if you had a call you wanted to make or a question you wanted to add to this, just jump on the phone right quick at 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. You know, when we have in our fund drives, we talk about the uniqueness of KKFI as a station here in Kansas City metropolitan area. And I think this is a prime example of one of those occasions. I think this is showing how we reach out, how we make ourselves available, and how people are reaching out to us, how people, the public itself, is seeing us as a venue for news. I mean, can you imagine this getting on one of the major news stations with all the garbage that's going on right now? I mean, they wouldn't find room to be able to add this to their agenda. Jeremy, you have these two groups you're working with, and I think one of them's getting ready to have some permaculture sessions, aren't they?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, it's Introduction to Urban Permaculture. So that lets you know this is going to be a community course, I guess UMKC if it's community, and it's going to be going on Wednesday the 9th and 16th of November. Sessions are from 7 to 9. I guess if you want more information about that, go to the Community course book. Go to Community and look that up. That's being taught by Steve Mann. He mentioned he's one of the Steves that I made reference to on the tape. And he will be there giving that course. But go to the Community course book, and you can get that information. Well, Jeremy, we about ready to call this quiz. Anything else you want to add to this before they put us out of here?
Well, I just want to thank you, Richard, for being the magnet, the attractor for this to happen. You put out the flare of your important work in the community, and Tammy saw it, and she was sort of drove this forward, and other folks pitched in. But this is a really crucial event, a really important solution to the oppression that Palestinian people are facing. So support that. Self-empowerment through permaculture in Palestine's West Bank, next Monday, November 7th, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the ECM at 1204 Oread Avenue in Lawrence, Kansas, at the edge of the KU campus.
All right, folks, thank you for listening in, and we'll see you at the permaculture event or back here on KKFI next Monday. Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, my name is Mike Murphy, filling in for Natural E with the calendar of events. So Saving Plants, Saving Ourselves event, November 1st, 6:30 p.m. As a scientist point to a sixth great extinction of plants and animals, a renowned botanist is sharing his research on how to save species and in the process save humans from an extinction that is primarily caused by human activity. Botanist Peter Raven will examine the implications of rapidly increasing extinctions and the need to take measures he says could save most of the endangered species. He will speak on Saving Plants, Saving Ourselves at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, tomorrow, November 1st, at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City, Missouri Library. Raven is President Emeritus of the Missouri Botanical Garden, Chairman of the National Geographic Society's Committee for Research and Exploration, and a recipient of the U.S. National Medal of Science. He was recognized as one of Time Magazine's Heroes of the Planet. This event is presented by the Kansas City Public Library and Powell Gardens. The Plaza Library is located at 4801, and you can go to the Plaza Library website to RSVP. And also urban homesteading classes, the three remaining of this eight-part series take place the 3rd, 10th, and 17th of November. Those are Thursday nights at the MU Extension for Jackson County, which is at 105 East 5th Street here in Kansas City. If you live in an urban area and want to learn how to grow your food, the University of Missouri Extension is offering their first ever urban homesteading series. Classes will have hands-on learning to help you develop these skills. To find out more, you can contact the Jackson County Extension at 816-482-5850. And as Richard mentioned, the two things Richard talked about, both regarding permaculture, a week from today at 6:30 at the ECM in Lawrence, there will be a permaculture in Palestine presentation and empowerment through permaculture in Palestine. And then on Wednesday, the Introduction to Urban Permaculture Community Diversity course takes place. Permaculture, ethics-based sustainable design system. We'll explore permaculture designs for urban and suburban homesteads and farms, and topics covered include the initial envisioning process led by Michael Allman and Steve Mann from the Kansas City Permaculture Education Extension and Research. And for more info, you can email Steve at foodnotlawnskc.org. And as always, we're going to go out with This Week in Water, and stay tuned for Fiesta Musical.
The U.S. military admits to dumping toxic chemicals. That and other stories on H2O Radio's weekly news report about water. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin. And it's This Week in Water.
The U.S. Air Force has admitted that it discharged toxic chemicals directly into the Colorado Springs sewer system about three times a year. The dangerous compounds have been used by the military in firefighting foam.
The government's admission comes after the chemicals were found in nearby drinking water systems earlier this year. In May, the EPA linked the compounds to various cancers. The Air Force was the suspected cause of the contamination.
Now, the Colorado Springs Gazette is reporting the U.S. military knew the chemicals were toxic more than 35 years ago, but continued to use and release them. Studies by the Air Force as far back as 1979 demonstrated the chemical was harmful to laboratory animals.
The Army Corps of Engineers told nearby Fort Carson to stop using the foam in 1991, and 6 years later told soldiers to treat it as a hazardous material, saying it was harmful to the environment.
Despite all of the warnings about the compounds, the Air Force still uses the chemical in Colorado Springs, storing no less than 600 gallons of the firefighting chemical at Peterson Air Force Base.
To make matters worse, the service announced last week that it had released an additional 150,000 gallons of water polluted with the chemical into the Colorado Springs sewage system and from there into Fountain Creek.
The Air Force said an investigation into the recent discharge is ongoing. Meanwhile, the city of Colorado Springs has told the Air Force that its firefighting foam isn't welcome in city sewers.
There may be some thawing in the icy relationship between the U.S. and Russia. On Friday, after years of negotiating, the two countries agreed with 22 other nations and the European Union to create the world's largest marine protected area off Antarctica.
The protected area is very large, about twice the size of Texas, and will include a blanket ban on commercial fishing.
Secretary of State John Kerry said the agreement will safeguard one of the last unspoiled ocean wilderness areas on the planet, home to unparalleled marine biodiversity and thriving communities of penguins, seals, whales, seabirds, and fish.
A spokesperson for the Pew Charitable Trusts said the environment had become a passionate project for Russian President Vladimir Putin's former chief of staff, Sergei Ivanov, probably something not widely known to those in the U.S.
The New Zealand foreign minister said he was surprised that the U.S. and Russia had reached any sort of agreement, considering the conflict in Syria.
Scientists have estimated that the Southern Ocean produces about three-quarters of the nutrients that sustain life in the rest of the world's oceans. The region is also home to most of the world's penguins and whales.
The Pennsylvania Medical Society is calling for a moratorium on new shale gas drilling and fracking until there can be more study done to understand the safety and risks of the controversial technique.
The 16,000 doctors who are members of the organization rejected a similar resolution 3 years ago, but now one of the physicians told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette that there is growing evidence that fracking's deleterious effects outweigh any economic benefit.
The vote to support the moratorium was taken at a meeting of the organization's 300-member House of Delegates and was unanimous.
A day after the Pennsylvania doctors called for more study of fracking, the Yale School of Public Health released a report finding that numerous carcinogens used in the process have the potential to contaminate the air and water of nearby communities.
The Yale study examined more than 1,000 chemicals that may be released into air or water by fracking. It found that information on their cancer-causing potential was lacking for 80% of the compounds.
It also concluded that the contaminants increase the risk of childhood leukemia.
Meanwhile, on Thursday, the lower house of the Irish Parliament passed a bill prohibiting fracking, which is the first step toward a nationwide ban.
As concerns grow over possible cutbacks in the use of water stored in Lake Mead, the Colorado River Indian tribes have agreed with the Bureau of Reclamation to make more water available to others.
The tribes will fallow land on the reservation and allow the conserved water to be available for storage in the reservoir.
Tribal Chairman Dennis Patch told KAWC in Yuma that Arizona is in great need of water, and the tribes' conservation methods will allow them to help the state and the overall region.
In return for fallowing some fields and conserving water, the tribes will receive about $1.5 million.
According to Patch, the tribes hold the most senior water rights on the river.
And finally this week, hackers broke into a water treatment plant. The pumps abruptly stopped, monitors flipped off, and ultraviolet lamps went dark.
But Joe Needleman wasn't too worried. Actually, he was pretty stoked. He and four other students at Cal Poly Pomona had spent the last month writing 5,000 lines of code for this very purpose. And it totally worked, as reported in The Atlantic.
And the water treatment plant they attacked? It was a scale model made up of three plastic tubs, several aquarium pumps, and PVC pipe.
Cal Poly was one of several teams competing at the hackathon to take down the mock facility. The event was hosted by Passcode, the Christian Science Monitor's cybersecurity-focused publication.
The point? More and more private companies and the government are scrambling to hire and train the brightest young hackers to defend against cyber attacks on our energy grid and infrastructure.
Basically, they're looking for white hat coders who want to put their skills to work for good.
That may or may not appeal to Zach Wade of Carnegie Mellon, who seemed way too excited about breaking into the faux treatment plant's control systems. He deleted every user account except his own and raised the tank temperature to 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit, generally leaving a trail of destruction as he worked.
The savage attack didn't leave any real-world damage, but it did leave a strong impression on the company reps observing the event, who didn't miss a chance to grab lots of resumes.
This Week in Water is sponsored by the American Water Works Association. Learn more about new water science, research, and treatment November 13 through 17 in Indianapolis. Information can be found at awwa.org/WQTC16.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.